Howdy, my name is Chris Zeekhand, and I'm here with Rick Edelstein, who is lead developer and CEO of Cicada, and we're doing yet another episode of the Cicada podcast on security.
Good morning.
Howdy, how you doing?
I'm doing just peachy.
Mm-hmm. So what are we talking about today?
So today, just want to square off on a couple of articles that I was reading this week. One of them was the Endpoint Security Management Buyer's Guide, the ESM Lifecycle. On Securosis, and the other one was on Talk Tech to Me. Three reasons to keep external employees internally controlled, and both of these articles, again, you know, what we're seeing is, you know, addressing the logical issues. If we look at Securosis, they've put a nice little chart on their page where they talk about periodic and ongoing security. In periodic, they're talking about patch management and config management. Ongoing, they're talking about file integrity monitoring and device control. If we drill down further into what their definition of device control is, they're talking about ability to use USB ports, etc. And, you know, one of the references they cite is users like to share music and attach their iPods. And as far as I'm concerned, in a secure environment, you know, user work habits that are outside of the work cycle should, you know, I believe there's no reason to accommodate these. You know, the products that we're looking at that are out there called, you know, like SafeEnd, et cetera, which is now owned by Wave, which allow companies to define what can be attached to the USB port or which devices can be attached to the computer in general, and what the behavior and what the how these devices can function. And, you know, this comes down to, you know, controlling the logical interface with these devices. In the world of Cicada, where, you know, I'm kind of surprised to see that in the device management space there's no statement about physical security. Actually, am I surprised? I'm not really surprised, because it's a sector of security which is very commonly ignored, and not because there's no need for it. It's just that nobody knows of a better way to protect their systems against physical threat. We talk to somebody about physical security, again, it comes back to evoking notions of the cable lock and physical restraint devices. So what we'd like to see is, in the device management in the ongoing section here, we'd like to see a focus on physical security. And it's our belief that as people become more aware of what the Cicada does as an active physical threat security platform, is that we'll start seeing more devices like Cicada, hopefully not, but more awareness to the need for implementing technologies that will protect against physical threat. So that was pretty much my opinion of the Securosis side. And then in Talk Tech to Me, they're talking about the reasons to keep external employees internally controlled. This comes down to, you know, protecting the trusted environment and maintaining the security of your information. I'm not going to say the internal network. When we connect a workstation to a trusted environment, that workstation becomes a part of an extension of the trusted environment. So accordingly, any device which connects to that trusted environment must inherit the same security policy as an internal employee or any other device connected inside the network would have. Where we fit into this roadmap is that when we have computers within the office, these computers have physical security, meaning that, you know, whether you have a guard at the door or locks on the door, restricted zones in the office, you're basically controlling who has access to your office. Somebody who walks into your office who you don't recognize typically will be recognized by one of the other staff and handled accordingly. But it certainly would be, you know, very, you know, would be bad security if somebody were to walk in and just walk off with your computer. And the same has to be expected of when you're running a computers in a remote environment. You have to have a physical level of security on that station, that while that station is connected to trusted resources or has access to confidential information, whether it's from the remote network or stored locally on its own storage, the physical security of that station must be such that somebody just can't walk up to that station, access that data while the station's logged in, and you end up with an incident where you have confidential information which is exposed to unauthorized individuals. So this is again where, you know, what some of the matters that we're addressing with the Cicada, which is to be able to, when that device connects into that remote network, the remote network's gateway policy can validate that the that remote station connecting has adequate physical security set to a specific policy to assure that somebody's not going to come up to that station while it's logged in and access confidential resources. So this is, you know, where what our opinion is on this, and you know, we're taking a look at we're looking at what's mentioned in Talk Tech to me, and definitely going to respond to with a comment to their article after this podcast. But you know, where our feeling is that, you know, we're still, you know, looking at people out there who are talking about best practice and again ignoring physical security.
It's a sort of thing where physical security, you think it's almost like a no-brainer.
It is. I mean, it is almost a no-brainer, and it's because of that people have just left it as an afterthought. It's if we take a look at back in '92, as I said before, Kensington developed the cable lock, and at that point, physical security was defined as we attach a lock to a computer. And since that time, little has evolved to really change that method. Kensington, of course, has improved over the years the way you can do a cable lock, but the way they do cable locks. But what they haven't done is they haven't addressed, you know, a better technology than you know, a dumb lock. So, you know, the lock, whether it's installed or not, you can't validate it as a security administrator. How the effectiveness of the lock is limited to, you know, the strength somebody's willing to exert on that device to yank it off the computer. So you don't, you know, and if it's been violated, you have no means to report this or audit it. Actually, when we were doing our patent, what was very interesting was we noticed that HP had recognized this vulnerability in the cable locks, that, you know, somebody who was seriously motivated to steal that computer will rip that lock out of the anchor. And so what HP actually did was they built a little an anchor pad, a metal anchor pad that connected to their circuit board. And if somebody were to yank that connector, the cable lock out of the computer, it would actually rip a little anchor out of the circuit board, making the computer non-functional. It would actually brick that computer by inhibiting current to go to the power stage of that circuit board. They would actually turn the computer into a brick because it actually damaged the circuit board in the process of removing that cable lock. I don't know if HP ever implemented this, but it was an interesting an interesting patent from two perspectives. One is from the innovation side, and the second was from the aspect that this was obviously developed because they recognized a risk at the physical physical security level.
Yeah, no, it's sort of thing where you have the whole idea of just wanting to keep the unit itself intact, and at which point having a sort of self-destruct mechanism on it is only good in James Bond movies.
Well, effectively, that's what HP did, was they developed a self-destruct device. And, you know, I'm sure that the reason we may not have seen this become too popular was probably because there were people who, you know, had their computer stolen, may have retrieved it, and now had a piece of junk on their hands that was non-usable. I mean, you go out and buy a new system board, you might as well be buying a new computer. So one of the other things I wanted to mention was interesting week. I was writing an article this week called "Pulling Back the Blinders," or "Pulling Back the Blinkers," rather. Which was, you know, an article on expanding the visibility of security to the physical layer. And in this process, I was co-authoring this with a professor at Norwich University named Mish Kabay. And Mish held my feet to the fire on a number of aspects of writing this article. But one of the things that was funny was when I wrote the bio on the article, I stated, you know, and one of the co-authors of Best Practices for the Destruction of Digital Data. So Mish said to me, says, you know, Rick, I searched the net and all I see is references on how to request the paper, but I don't see any means to download it. If we're going to state this, you've got to make it so that it's publicly available. So I thought about it, and it was something I've been toying with for a while. And what I did was I spent a few hours this week and I've reformatted the articles, or the not the article, reformatted the paper so that it would be available in Kindle digital format. And if ever anybody's ever done this, it's kind of like writing with a straitjacket. Nonetheless, the paper is now available on Kindle Digital Press. It's easy to download, and we made it very cost-effective. Where others are charging hundreds, if not thousands, for guidance, I've made this one easily accessible at $9.99 so that it can be exposed to the general public. Mm-hmm. So this paper was actually written in 2009, and I'm going to do some updates for SSDs, but it's still very valid for current hard drive technology. And what happened was I used to spend a lot of time educating clients on the best practices for destroying digital data and the reasons why. And having done this time and again, I felt that I was due to write a white paper on, you know, what I kept proselytizing. And so what I did was I collected information from every possible resource, academic, industry, and also from any from government as well. And I went through everything that I could get my hands on. And you know, the interesting thing about guidance is that nobody puts a best before date on it. So when the guidance is no longer valid, you know, how is the reader to know? So, you know, one of the most common things that has been mentioned was DoD 5220M as being the which is called the NISPOM standard, but as the means, the de facto means to destroy data, by according to the Department of Defense in the U.S. And the fact was that this standard has been retired since pretty much around 2006, and the guidance has been handed off to the NIST. And the thing here is that nobody knows, or a lot of people don't want you to know that this guidance is no longer active, because most don't have the means to market a solution that that would do anything but attain DoD 5220. Regardless, I'm going off on a tangent here, but the point of the matter is that went through 3,500 pages of guidance and distilled it down into 50 plus pages. Although I had initially intended for this to be a 10-11 page light and fluffy piece, it ended up much larger and covered many different aspects of data destruction. So what we have now is basically comprehensive guidance which can be used by the security professional to round out their security policy so that it adequately covers the decommissioning of hard drives at the end of their usable life cycle. Decommissioning, recycling, repurposing. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much
okay.
It.
And is there a link on your website to that?
No, there should be. Uh-huh. I will update. We'll put it in the blog. It is on our Facebook page. Mm-hmm. The link to the link to the Amazon page, but we'll stick it on the website right now.
Okay.
In the next few days.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Is there anything else?
No.
Cool. At which point, thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll speak to you later.